This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, March 18th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, COVID cooldown continues at Public Health, Smart welcomes new buses to the fleet, Ute tribes address the legislature, and a mountain weather forecast. But first, KOTO reflects the values of this unique community. KOTO is a hub of creativity where all are welcome and freedom of expression knows no bounds. Show your support by going to KOTO.org to donate. And thank you. Norwood lost a member of its community on Monday morning. Arthur Myers passed away in his Norwood home after losing a battle with cancer. He was 87 years old. The San Miguel County Coroner's Office notes Myers was well-loved by everyone, and his friendships were his greatest priority. He took full advantage of his home, getting out on his snowmobile or side-by-side going trap shooting. Touch of Care Hospice provided care for Myers. Crippen Funeral Home will attend to services. Myers is survived by his daughters, Tanya and Terry, his two grandchildren, and his three great-grandchildren. Four years ago, the world was entering the first days of COVID lockdown. That time is still very much with us, but locally and nationally, the disease which brought the world to a halt has continued to loosen its grip. KOTO's Gavin McGough heard a report from the county's public health director and has this update on their pandemic response programs.
COVID just ain't what it used to be.
Especially this last winter wave, hospitalizations and deaths have gone down substantially. It hasn't been as big as it had been over the last few winters. But it's still like 2,000 people a week getting hospitalized, so I would still say proceed with caution.
That's Public Health Director Grace Franklin speaking before the San Miguel Board of County Commissioners earlier this month. Responding to the decline in disease numbers, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention lifted its isolation period for anyone testing positive with COVID-19 at the outset of the month. While prior, folks with a positive test were asked to isolate for 5 days, the CDC removed that guideline. It now lumps COVID protocol in with other respiratory diseases. Those protocols have some specifics, says Franklin.
But really, it's stay home and then take precautions as you can. So masking, if you can, stay home more and you're still feeling crummy, that's great. The tricky part with this is contagiousness of COVID has not changed. Most people tend to be infectious somewhere between 5 to 12 days. But we see the majority of infectiousness, or like the height of infectiousness, is really that first few days where you're the most symptomatic.
The CDC does recommend continued boosters, especially for elder and at-risk populations. The vast majority of folks hospitalized with COVID are not up to date on their vaccines. What that means locally, says Franklin, is stop by the public health offices in Telluride.
We continue to have our Wednesday clinics, 2:30 to 4:30 at the third floor clinic space. We've definitely gotten a lot of interest from folks, which is always exciting, and we're always happy to make other appointments as available.
You can sign up for a vaccine appointment at bit.ly/smc-vaccines. If shots in arms are one hallmark of the pandemic response, another is swabs up noses. That's testing, of course, and for years, San Miguel County Public Health has distributed thousands of free tests to county residents. The COVID-era funding they were using to stock that supply, it ran dry this month. Meanwhile, the last batch of tests is trickling out the door. Franklin asks commissioners, should public health look for funding to keep that supply going? Commissioners say maybe not, so long as COVID remains at low levels in the community. Here's Commissioner Waring.
Let's hold with our current supply. I'm waiting, watching my commissioners to see if you're in agreement. And keep an eye on the wastewater treatment numbers as long as they're available.
Okay.
And keep an ear to the ground for any change in the moderate status.
Thus, the current batch of rapid tests will be the county's last, for now, anyway. another sign of the pandemic's dwindling impact on our lives here in San Miguel County. The website, again, to sign up for immunizations is bit.ly/smc-vaccines.
If you're taking the bus from Norwood, Nucla, or Naderita, chances are you're riding on a new Gillig bus.
They are across the board a higher quality bus in every way, shape, and form.
That's David Averill, Executive Director of the San Miguel Authority for Regional Transportation, speaking at a Smart Board meeting last week.
And we've even outfitted them with luggage racks, so longer haul riders can have a place to put coats and bags and things like that, USB ports so they can recharge their phone or their iPads on there, as well as frankly, more comfortable seats.
Averill acknowledges it's not everyone's cup of tea to get excited about new buses, but he says it's a big step for the transit body.
We're in the best position we've been as an agency with this procurement as far as having reliable vehicles and backups, which we've never had before.
He notes when Smart took over Down Valley and Norwood routes, they were given older buses, but they never had extra.
I sleep a little bit better at night knowing we've got a spare bus up there. In case one doesn't fire up in the morning. As painful as it is to buy buses and do the paperwork and go through the grant process and all that stuff, number one, it's our bread and butter. We have to do it. But boy, when you get vehicles like this, it just makes it so much worth it. So,
in addition to the buses, Carrie DiStefano, operations manager for Smart, says they're also in the process of buying new vans for the van pool and preparing to add a new Montrose route. DiStefano notes she's also done work to identify how commuters behave, which stops they use, and which direction they're going in.
I don't think it would be any surprise to anybody but that on the Down Valley route, Placerville and the Bivvy generate the bulk of the traffic.
She adds the Down Valley route also sees pickups from Lawson Hill, Eider Creek, and Hillside, she presumes to beat school traffic. Two Rivers also has a lot of riders, DiStefano says, and she expects that to increase as Telski and Mountain Village build affordable housing in the neighborhood.
We are eventually going to be called upon to provide more service down there because I think we're going to see a lot more activity on the Two Rivers, in the Two Rivers area.
Finally, the Lawson Hill Mountain Village route has seen higher traffic this winter, especially as Mountain Village charges for parking. But the yearly numbers are still up in the air. Mountain Village will not be charging for parking during the summer.
That may make a difference, and we've seen a big increase in ridership on that route throughout the winter, but that may change if the parking situation doesn't continue.
Meanwhile, Smart is preparing for its off-season schedule, which will start on April 8th when the gondola closes. The Ute Mountain Ute and Southern Ute tribes are the two remaining native tribes with recognized land in Colorado. The General Assembly held its second annual Ute Day at the Capitol last week. In this installment of Capitol Conversation, KOTO State House reporter Lucas Brady Woods shares priorities from tribal leaders. Lucas, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me.
As always, happy to be here.
Last week, the General Assembly held its Ute Day at the state capitol. Can you just share a little bit, what is this day and what was it like in the capitol on Friday?
It's really a fun day here at the state capitol. In the morning, they host sort of a ceremonial gathering in the West Foyer where there's some ceremonial traditional drum circles, and, some statements by members of the Ute Mountain Ute and the Southern Ute Tribe. I had a chance to talk to Miss Ute Mountain along with Junior Miss Ute Mountain and Little Miss Ute Mountain, which are wonderful representatives of the tribe from three different age groups. And they were decked out in some really cool traditional Ute regalia. They actually said that they were most excited about the powwow that took place here at the Denver Coliseum over the weekend. But, Ute Day at the Capitol is also important to them as it is really a day to advocate for, tribal interests and needs that can be delivered hopefully by state government and by the legislature. And, I think one of the most important parts of the day is the State of the Tribes Address, which this is the second time it's happened. It was the first State of the Tribes Address was last year, and And that's an address delivered by the heads of the Ute Mountain Ute and the Southern Ute tribes, Colorado's two Native American tribes, to a joint session of the legislature. So the Senate and the House gather together in the House chamber, and Chairman Hart of the Ute Mountain Ute tribe and Chairman Baker of the Southern Ute tribe, you know, sort of lay out their legislative priorities and their needs.
You know, you just mentioned it, but what are some of the things that tribal leaders are saying that they need from the government of Colorado?
There's a lot of things. Look, I mean, to be frank, the reservations in Colorado, the officially federal recognized reservations in Colorado, are in a pretty remote part of the state as far as resources are concerned and population is concerned, and it's extremely far away from Denver. So that kind of remoteness makes it difficult, creates some challenges that a lot of communities face in parts of the state. You know, transportation is a big one, but that means, you know, not just transportation, but that means, you know, access to healthcare, access to other services. So, you know, one of the big things that Chairman Hart called on the state for is help with healthcare, specifically with tribal members who suffer from diabetes. He specifically mentioned, you know, creating a state program that could help with regular checkups to tribal members in their homes who have diabetes. Now, Southern Ute Chairman Baker called out the Polis administration for not following through on promises to create equity in sports betting. Sports betting was legalized a number of years ago here in the state of Colorado, but Baker says that tribes have not been able to access sports betting, even though they have casinos and gambling is an important revenue stream for them. So he said that there have been some promises broken. He said that Governor Polis promised him last year that this would be a priority over the intervening year, and that he would send the head of the gaming division, the Colorado Gaming Division, to, you know, visit the tribes and address the problem directly. But he says he hasn't even heard from the office and called on the governor's office to follow through with this promise. I've reached out to the governor's office, both the lieutenant governor and the governor, and I haven't heard back on his response or her response to this issue. But, you know, we'll see. Chairman Baker said the tribes are tired of broken promises, and I don't think anybody can fault them for that.
You know, you mentioned the reservations in Colorado are very far from Denver, a relatively small landmass within the state. What sense do you get from lawmakers that, you know, they're going to take these issues or take these calls to heart and actually, you know, do what is being requested of them by these tribal leaders?
There are definitely a lot of allies that the tribes have in this building. I mean, I don't think any lawmaker would say that they oppose the tribes' interests, but their interests are just like the interests of anybody else, right? A lot of, you know, these healthcare issues or other issues like water, you know, the environment, hunting, various things, education, you know, access to junior college and apprenticeship. These are all issues that various communities in Colorado face. So they face the same opposition as these issues would face in any community.
Well, Lucas, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today, and we'll check back in next week.
Thanks so much for having me, and I'll talk to you soon.
That was KOTO's Lucas Brady Woods reporting from Denver. Telluride's Community Conversations dive into the tough topics. A collaboration between the Wilkinson Public Library, Tri-County Health Network, and many other local organizations, the goal is to create a space to make the hard conversations, hopefully, a little easier. Conversations have looked at mental health, LGBTQ issues, sex education for parents, and conflict and trauma. This month, the community conversation will address sexual assault. The event will be facilitated by the San Miguel Resource Center and include breakout sessions, poetry, and discussion. Organizers note participants are welcome to speak and share their experience, but ad individuals are also welcome to join, simply listen, and take a brochure or piece of information. The community conversation on sexual assault will take place on Tuesday, March 19th at 5 p.m. at the Wilkinson Public Library. The event is bilingual. Food and childcare will be provided. Local hockey players have a lot to be proud of. Telluride High School students recently won the Class 4A state championship, defeating the Summit Tigers 4-2. Telluride students play on the Telluride Durango Demons hockey team. On top of that, the Lizard Head 12 and under Peewee team won the state championship against Vail in double overtime. To celebrate the players, there will be a parade down Main Street on Tuesday, March 19th at 2:30 p.m. The community is encouraged to come out and celebrate the local athletes. Body of Line is a short, animated documentary that tells the story of one climber's experience of a notoriously difficult route on Long's Peak on the Front Range. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KVNF's Taya Jay spoke with climbers and filmmakers Madeline Sorkin and Hannah Taylor.
The Dunn West Bay Direct on Long's Peak is the most difficult rock climb above 13,500 feet in the world. When Madeline Sorkin set out to make the climb, her hope was to challenge herself.
It was a mature goal of, can I bring an appreciation for what I'm getting to do with my body at this time in my life and really perform at a level that I know I'm capable of, but there's so much uncertainty with those goals.
Madeline and her wife, Hannah, a fellow climber and filmmaker, also set out to document the climb.
This one was fun because I really wanted Madeline, and Madeline really wanted to document the deeper process, which is harder to do climbing because it's a very solo, singular experience. So I actually asked her to journal every day. Madeline is a poet and working on a book, and so I was really wanting her to actively be writing poetry throughout.
There are a lot of climbing films out there, but according to these filmmakers, Body of a Line is unique.
It is, as far as I know, the first animated rock climbing documentary made in the States anyway.
The film was captured in real life, animated with 4,320 frames of original artwork, and accompanied by music and Madeline's poetry.
Fingers build a map of your edges. Ask how to take without taking. Climb a mountain without hands.
This effort to make a climbing film an art project was really trying to make it speak to really anybody who wants to be impacted by color and sound and space.
And I hope that what is really conveyed with this film is my love for that deep process and for the place. And I think that's obviously a very universal theme of how we express and experience love in this world.
For KVNF, I'm Taya Jay.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for scattered snow showers tonight with a low around 25 degrees. Tuesday, there's a chance of rain and snow showers with some thunder possible. The high is around 40 degrees with a low in the mid-20s. Wednesday, expect mostly sunny skies with a slight chance of snow showers. The high is in the mid-40s. Wednesday night should be mostly clear with a low around 25 degrees. This has been the news for Monday, March 18th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206.